Hello. You're listening to KDVS in Davis. It's 90.3 FM. KDVS.org. All that good stuff. My name is Chickpea, and I am going to be covering Book It. And I am going to be talking about the books that I read this year. I read 10 books this year. And I am excited to see if I can read more next year. I'm really excited to do this show just because I listen to Book It every Wednesday that it's on, as I get off of work, because I get off work at 4:30 and it takes me about until 4:45, 4:50 to get home. So it's always nice to listen. And let me do this funny little thing first and get my background music going here. This is Vanishing Kids. Oop. Yes, I am covering Book It for Micah. Oh gosh. I'm trying to make sure that stays in both ears. All right, so as I mentioned, I read 10 books this year. I read 3,485 pages. And, oh, did I mention my name's Chickpea? I'm not sure. I usually host the Saturday Morning Folk Show, as well as a show called Radio Cure, every other Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. Although, at the moment, I actually don't know if I have a last show next weekend. I'll have to check. But anyway, Saturday Morning Folk, that is what I think most people now may know me for. Who knows? But I like folk. I like psych. I like rock and experimental and just stuff I would mark as weird. So anyway, yes, as I mentioned, I read 3,485 pages this year. The most popular book that I read was Malibu Rising by Taylor Jenkins Reid, and the least popular that I read was called The Death of Vivek Oji by Akweke Emezi. Oops, that is... why did it do that? Hold on. Oh, I used shift, not control. All right, so the book that I read that I most enjoyed was Earthlings by Sayaka Murata, and I also read what is currently out in the Legendborn cycle, and that is a really, really great series. My least favorite book of this year was The Serpent and the Wings of Night. That is a fantasy, and I will obviously discuss as much as I can about these books. If I wanted to talk about every book, I'd have 3 minutes per book, and I've already gotten to 3 minutes today, and you know what? It doesn't matter, so I'm just going to talk about whatever I want. So, why not start on a low note? The Serpent and the Wings of Night by Carissa Broadbent. That is a book I read this year. It's actually the last book that I finished this year, and it was not great. The synopsis of the book is as follows. Human or vampire, the rules of survival are the same. Never trust, never yield, and always, always guard your heart. The adopted human daughter of the Nightborn Vampire King, Oriah, carved her place in a world designed to kill her. Her only chance to become something more than prey is entering the Kajari, a legendary tournament held by the goddess of death herself. But winning won't be easy amongst the most vicious warriors from all three vampire houses. To survive, Oriah is forced to make an alliance with the mysterious rival. Everything about Rain is dangerous. He's ruthless, efficient, an enemy to her father's crown and her greatest competition. Yet what terrifies Oriah most of all is that she finds herself oddly drawn to him. So, essentially, this follows Oriah. She is, the human daughter of the Nightborn Vampire King. And there's like the Nightborn vampires, because there's the House of Night, there's all these other houses. I don't really remember because like I didn't enjoy it as much. I think I rated it 3 stars, which honestly is like a for me. And I've had the chance to buy the second book and I haven't, so I think that tells you something. But essentially, the Nightborn King, I think his name was Victor, he is the Vampire King, and he has been the Vampire King of like the world. For I think it was like 300 years or something, and he is like the, like, he is knight, basically. And the Kajari is this tournament that happens once every, I don't even know how many years, but it's a very long amount of time. And it's all vampires fighting for the goddess of, is it the goddess of death? I'm not sure. No, yes, by the goddess of death herself. And so if they win the tournament and kill all the other vampires in the tournament, and anyone is allowed to enter. So she's human, but she enters. And if they kill all of the vampires, they are granted one wish by the goddess of death. And so she goes through the whole thing. Everyone is like, you're a vampire, you're weak, blah, 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 blah. And she's like, I'm made of steel because Victor loves me and I'm a human. And how could he do that? And basically, the book is just her learning that, you know, the way that he loved her was, like, as a father, was abusive emotionally, and just bad. And yes, she falls in love with Rain, who is a vampire, who is also a part of, like, the sect that is against her father's rule. So she falls in love with him. They find a way to finish the game, right? And you can actually, if I'm trying to remember, I don't think there's one person in the book who does not die. She's taken away, like, out of the, oh yes, because you can choose to leave at any time. If it's nighttime, you're allowed to leave, or no, if it's daytime, you're allowed, whatever. Anyway, you're allowed to leave at any point. She doesn't leave, obviously. Spoiler alert, she wins, Rain dies, and then she uses her wish to bring Rain back to life. And she doesn't know that he's, like, the leader of the sect that is against her father's rule, but he wins, kills Victor, and then now she's trapped as the, like, consort of Rain. But I think they actually enjoy each other's company. So that's what that book was about. Yeah, 3 stars, mid. My favorite book was Earthlings by Sayaka Murata. I actually recommended Micah read this book because I really want to hear their thoughts on it. But this is a body horror, thriller, magical, realist, contemporary Japanese novel. Yes, and it is actually only rated 3.6 on Goodreads, which is really sad. But basically, she is this woman, now woman, who is asexual, living her quiet life with her asexual husband, surviving, pretending to be human, because she thinks that she is an alien. She has, I think it's a cousin who she loved as a child. They discovered they were aliens together, and she is just trying to survive in this world. And as she continues to go about her life, she starts to remember things that happened to her as a child. His name is Yu, the cousin. And we're just remembering these terrible things that happened to her as a child. Remembering, you know, just how people are treating her. And she just was like, I cannot live in this world anymore. So she goes to her child, her family's home, that is, like, abandoned now, and she and her fake husband and Yu are all, like, they think they're aliens, and they go down this path of like eating each other and just kind of going crazy. But, and I'm not great at describing this, but I think that this book was phenomenal. It just goes so in depth on a, like, abstract level about what it means to be human, what it means to feel like you are not human, navigating all the things that have happened to you throughout your lifetime to, and, you know, and how you are dealing with that as an adult. And I think did I even write a review about this? I didn't write an actual review for it, but oh my gosh, this book is amazing. It's, so many people were like, this is absurd, this is terrible, but I think they just didn't get it. They really did not get it. It's graphic, yes, but she, like, just like, what does it mean to be a human? What does this vessel that I'm in mean? How do we handle our trauma? How do I become my real self? Why do people treat me this way? I don't know what's going on. And I think it's just, it was so good. And I read it earlier in the year, so I wish I could talk about it more in depth, but I just don't have as much in my brain about it. And I'm also, I have a headache, so there's only so much I can talk about. But yes, she thinks that society is called the factory. So the factory requires them to adhere to social norms, procreate, go to work, live their lives, whatever. And she's like, I don't want to be a part of the factory. And so how else to go against the factory than by thinking so deeply about your flesh and going so far as to consume, you know, instead of just to use, to produce, but to take in and devour as well. So, oh, so good. But Earthlings, Sayaka Murata. I hope Micah's not listening to this because I don't want to spoil it for them, because I really want them to read it. I also read Convenience Store Woman by Sayaka Murata this year. I enjoyed that less, but that's her more popular book. I won't really go into depth about it, but it is another feminist novel, and it is this woman who is like, I love my work at the convenience store. I am made for the convenience store and the convenience of all these people. Everything is the same. I love it. It's perfect. And people just don't get her. And yeah. Anyway, other book, Malibu Rising, Taylor Jenkins Reid. I read two Taylor Jenkins Reid books this year, Malibu Rising and Carrie Soto Is Back. I'm a big fan of TJR. I love Daisy Jones and the Six. I have not watched the show because I was really excited when it was coming out, because I was like, oh my gosh, like, it's going to be great. And then I am like, I can't. I don't know what it's going to be like, and I don't want to deal with it. So Daisy Jones and the Six, so good. I read it in, I think I was in Colorado. Yeah. Was I in Colorado? No. No, I was not. Yes. Because I did not read that book this year. That was years ago. Okay. Anyway. And what's the other book she has that I really like? I don't remember. It's not Evelyn Hugo. Whatever. So Malibu Rising is about four famous siblings who are throwing this huge party at their house to celebrate the end of summer. And it only takes place over the course of 24 hours, but there's also a lot of flashbacks, which I really enjoyed. But it's 1983 in Malibu, August. Nina Riva, she has this annual huge end of summer party, and everyone wants to be around it because Nina is a famous model. Her brothers, Jay and Hud, are surfers and photographers, and they have a younger sister named Kit, as well as their father, Mick Riva, who is... he also, what's the word, comes into Carrie Soto's back and is also in Daisy Jones and the Six. But Nina, she's like, I don't want this party. I don't want this to happen. And she has a pro tennis player husband who is also in Carrie Soto Is Back. He is not a main character. He's a side character, but Carrie Soto also comes back in Malibu Rising. Yada yada. Anyway, basically this huge party goes completely out of control. All this stuff happens. Clothes are set on fire. People are screaming. Life is happening. And I'll be super honest, I don't fully remember what happened in this book, but I know I really liked it. So, oh, actually, this is the review I actually wrote about it. I said, I really enjoyed the lead up to the party. But once 1 a.m. hit, because the book takes place in hour increments, I started wishing the story kept focusing on Nina and less on all the partygoers. Who are all the partygoers? Who cares? I want more Nina. I want more Kit. I want a book just about them. I thought the majority of the secondary characters, especially in the second act, were shallow. Even Mick, who is the one who is ruining their life and is kind of the cause of most of the events in the book. But this is the book that piqued my interest on Carrie Soto. So in turn, I read Kerry Soto is Back. I really did enjoy Kerry Soto is Back. She is this tennis player who is super duper famous. She's like the best female tennis player in the world. And she is retired, a now retired tennis player by the time it takes place. This is in the 90s by the time the book starts. And she won 20 slams, which, if you know tennis, that's a lot. And I don't know tennis. But she sacrificed everything to become the best. She is hard. She will not take people who she deems to be weaker than her. She is coming back for a year of slams and opens because she wants to reclaim her place as the best tennis player in the world, because Nikki Chan is a new tennis player who is kind of killing the game. And she says, I don't want that. I want to do my own thing. So, and I want to be better than her. So she retires 6 years later. She is watching the U.S. Open and says, I want my, what's the word I'm looking for? I want my title back. Nikki Chan is going down. So she's 37, which is old for a tennis player. She makes the decision to come out of retirement to be coached by her father for one last time. And she wants to reclaim her record. Her name is the Battle Axe. Sports media hates her. They say, you know, she's harsh, she's mean. She would purposefully like hit balls to her opponents' like feet if they were injured, making them roll their ankles, stuff like that. So she basically has to learn how to swallow her pride and just learn to not see everything as a case of I'm better than you and I need to stay better than you. So Kerry Soto's back for one epic final season. It is a story about the cost of greatness and a legendary athlete attempting a comeback. I loved it. I loved Kerry Soto's back. Definitely in my top top half of the books I read this year. The last chapter was amazing. I don't want to spoil this one just because, like, I really want people to read it. It was really good. So, Nikki Chan, Javier Soto, Bo Huntley, TJR, I love you. You're amazing. So, Kerry Soto's back was great. And people start this book and think, Kerry's terrible. She's a horrible person. She's annoying. I don't like her. And so people didn't finish it. And there's this person who commented, they're like, Kerry's father, because her father's, oh my gosh, where is he from? I don't remember. But this person wrote a review that says, Kerry's father repeatedly speaks Spanish at length. Taylor Jenkins Reid makes no attempt to offer any translation. Readers who aren't fluent will be left clueless. Did I miss something? I'll never know. And that was like their main concern, their main issue with the book. Google it? Context clues? I don't know. I Googled it when I didn't know. And I know a little bit of Spanish. I was able to understand like most of it, but whatever. And yes, the book is about tennis. So if you, like, I was there for Kerry Soto and I was there for her comeback. I was there for her emotions, all that good stuff. But yes, it is about tennis. I learned so much about tennis because of this book. So if you don't care about tennis, don't read the book. It's a lot of tennis. And that is Kerry Soto's back. Okay, other book, The Death of Vivek Oji. This, top three, easy. This is a book about Vivek Oji, who is, here, I'll read the, it says, raised by a distant father and an understanding but overprotective mother, Vivek suffers disorienting blackouts, moments of disconnection between self and surroundings. As adolescence gives way to adulthood, Vivek finds solace in friendships with the warm, boisterous daughters of the Niger wives, foreign-born women married to Nigerian men. But Vivek's closest bond is with Osita, the worldly, high-spirited cousin whose teasing confidence masks a guarded private life. Ooh, let me turn my secondary background music up. As their relationship deepens and Rosita struggles to understand Vivek's escalating crisis, the mystery gives way to a heart-stopping act of violence in a moment of exhilarating freedom. The death of Vivek Oji is about family, friendship. It's about loss, transcendence. It is at its heart a queer novel. Vivek Oji, when we meet them, is a man who is going off to school, but is in love with Ozita, who is his childhood friend. So of course, one, this takes place in Nigeria. Their relationship, they cannot tell anyone about it. And eventually Vivek starts experimenting with gender. That is why he was drawn to the Niger wives, or the daughters of the Niger wives, as I mentioned. And again, specifically, they're foreign-born women married to Nigerian men. So their daughters tend to have a little bit, like, quote-unquote, like, looser ideals, or looser just ties to traditional gender roles, masculinity, patriarchy. And they support Vivek in her, like, learning about herself and who she wants to be. And Ozita struggles with this at first. And of course, everyone is struggling with it. Vivek would, you know, get caught wearing dresses, and her parents are like, you can't do this. Like, someone is going to literally kill you. And I think that it's such a great novel in the way that it explores just, like, life and struggles and love and freedom, and how you can remain free even when you are in such a dire, like, terrible place. And I really don't want to talk too much about, like, the actual book itself and, like, what happened in it, because it's just one of those things you have to experience. I just loved The Death of Vivek Oji. I would definitely recommend it to literally everyone. It made me cry, and books don't tend to make me cry as much anymore. And this was one that will forever be in my top books ever. And it was also nominated for Reader's Favorite 2020 Fiction for Goodreads. I don't think it won, which is really sad, but it was really, 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 really good. And I left a review on it that just said, oh my god. So, Death of Vivek Oji, 100% read, please, if you can, if you want to. Amazing. Last book, or books, that I would like to talk about are Legendborn and, oh, what was the second book called? Oathbound. Won't go too in depth on this, but this was definitely, again, one of my favorites of the year, because it centers just Black stories. This girl, her name is Bree. She's 16 and she lives in North Carolina. She goes to a residential program for high schoolers at UNC Chapel Hill, and she is reeling from the death of her mother. And I think that this book, one, goes into such beautiful and great depth into loss. The author herself, Tracy Dion, she wrote this about kind of like her own experiences and just like using her own experiences to talk about it and go into depth about it. And her, the character Bree, she goes through therapy in the book, and it was really healing for her, and I think it kind of healed something in me. But the book is actually about the cycle, the Legendborn cycle, which is, if you're familiar with the Knights of the Round Table, basically Bree witnesses this magical attack her very first night on campus. All this crazy stuff is happening. She is seeing stuff that she is not supposed to see. She sees a demon feeding on humans, and she discovers the secret society called the Legendborn. And there is a teenage mage who calls himself Merlin, who tries to wipe her memory. He hates her. like hates her. They learn to be friends later. But basically, Bree unlocks this magic power within her that she didn't know she had. And she had a buried memory that the night her mother died, a Merlin was at the hospital with her. And she knows that something more happened with her mom's death. So she wants to figure out what happened, because clearly there was something magical, something she wasn't supposed to see, and something her father doesn't even know. So she wants to figure out what happened. And she becomes so engrossed in the world of the Legendborn and the Legendborn cycle, which I keep saying, but essentially it's the Knights of the Round Table. And it's all the descendants of Arthur's knights. And they are in this like super crazy, like conservative cult centered in Chapel Hill. And she recruits Nick, who is the descendant of Arthur. So essentially the knights get awakened there's drama and terror and stuff is not supposed to be happening. And so the knights are awoken within them, their powers, they're like magic crazy powers, are awoken in them as they go from like lowest in the round table to the highest. And there is this time where I think it's the fifth or fourth highest, like ranked fourth and fifth in the round table, they awaken their knights, which are these college students, and they slowly keep getting awoken until it gets to third, until it gets to second. And she just gets immersed in this world of the round table, discovering her own ties to the round table. And it is such a, for me, very healing journey about blackness as well, because she faces a lot of discrimination from these people. She is learning about the university's terrible past. She is learning about just so much, right? And she has to face it head on. There's no one, almost no one there that can help her with this. And she learns to, you know, just kind of go through it and, you know, learn and learn more about herself and her past. And it's just, it's a lot. So I, again, would definitely recommend the Legendborn cycle if you are interested in just magic and stories that kind of go out of the norm. Like, who writes books about the round table? I don't know. Tracy Dion did, and it was great. So anyway, that was the number one book I read this year, and that is going to be the end for me for Book It. Again, my name is Chickpea. I co-host the Saturday Morning Folk Show, which is every Saturday. I may or may not be here this week, but we shall see. So with that, I am going to say goodbye. Thank you for being here, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Look out now, this is the Diz, Dizzy Gillespie that is, and let me give you some information. If you want to hear some good sounds, the sounds that's round, keep your radio tuned to KDVS in Davis, 90.3 on your FM dial. Look out. Ow. This is Diz signing off.
Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your campus and community radio station on the first day of the year. Happy New Year to you and your families, and thanks for your support of KDVS. For the last 25 years, I've been delving into the basement of Freeborn Hall to share with you conversations with poets and pundits, prognosticators, people who care about creativity, poets of all sorts, poets who are actors, poets who are technologists, poets who are painters, poets who are appearing at the Poetry Night reading series. Such is the case this afternoon, for I have two poetic guests who I'm looking forward to introduce you to. The first is Nicolette Daskalakis. She is a poet who has in the past lived right here in the city of Davis. In fact, she's been an important part of the history of this very radio station. We're going to learn about that. She's got a new book out called Tell Me I'm Not on Fire, just published this past year, the year that ended yesterday. And she'll be the featured poet tomorrow night, the 2nd of February, at the John Natsoulas Gallery, 521 First Street, here in the city of Davis. Opening for Nicolette will be Dorian Jeanette. Dorian Jeanette is a poet who's been on this radio show a number of times in the past. She is Davis-based and the author of Urchin to Follow. Her poetry has been widely published. She has an MFA from New Mexico State University and a PhD from the University of Georgia. We'll get her on the live line at about 5:30. And then a few closing New Year's Day thoughts from your host. Just the sort of mix of intellectual, emotional, and spiritual creativity that you've come to expect when you tune in on a Wednesday afternoon or whenever you hear the podcast. Which podcast? This one. It's Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back with Nicolette Daskalakis. Stick around.